Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachas Daf Yud Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will be beginning from the bottom of Yud Ches Omid Beis, three lines from the bottom. In our previous shiur, we were discussing what the Mishnah meant when it said Lo Yotzak is kosher, and we established that Lo Yotzak meant that if a Kohen did not do it, but a Zar did do it, this would be okay. And we established that that was according to Shitas HaRabbanon. We saw, alternatively, another Shita, that of Rabbi Shimon, who indicated that Yitzika must be done by a Kohen. So the topic heading that you see to the bottom part of this page in the outside margin, the bottom of Yud Ches Omid Beis, we have a nosei, a topic heading that we include in our marked Gemaras, topic headings and structural notes as new sugyas appear. So in this case, our nosei, the topic heading, says Mai Taimo, we have Aleph de Rabbanon, and Beis de Rebbe Shimon. What is the reason for each one of their shitas? According to the Rabbanan, we've indicated the Yitzika Ksheira Bazar, that the pouring of the oil on the mincha is acceptable if done by a zar, a non-kohen, and we want to know what's the reason for Rabbi Shimon that says that Yitzika is psula bazar. Turning to the Gemara, three lines from the bottom, Mai Taimo de Rabbanan. Notice the squiggle underline here is used to draw your attention to the idea that the Gemara is going to investigate the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon. And hence, at the bottom line, you'll also notice a squiggle underline under Rabbi Shimon's name. So here the Gemara asks, Mai Taimo de Rabbanan, that Yitzika is kosher bazar. Omar kro, v'yotzak oleho shemen, v'nosan oleho levoino. Vehevio el bnei Aaron hakoyanim vekomatz. In this case, the Gemara is quoting Pasuk Aleph and Pasuk Beis of Vayikra Perek Beis. The appearance of Kohanim appears in Pasuk Beis attached to Kmitza. So from this, the Rabbanon derive Mikmitza v'Eilich, from the point at which the handful is taken of the meal offering, Mitzvas Kahuna. Then Kohanim are to be involved. Limeid al Yitzika ublila shikshera bazar. This shows us that with regard to the earlier stages of pouring of the oil and the mixing of the grain with the flour with the oil, that's the blila, that's kshera bazar. A non-Kohen is suitable for that. So according to the Rabbanan, the fact that Kohanim appear in conjunction with Kmitza, we understand that the earlier stages need not be done by Kohanim, including Yitzika and Blila. Rabbi Shimon. Now, we turn to Rabbi Shimon, who said that Kohanim are essential for the Yitzika action. Before we go further in Shitas Rabbi Shimon and the analysis, let's just note that we have a new marking. We see this house form, and we've indicated the role of this in the outside margin under our Mivneh heading. You can see a house form with an expression Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take back and forth nature of this sugya. So with the house form point facing upwards, Shuvos Beinyan Shitas Rabbi Shimon. These will be responses. In fact, where there was an underlying question that the Gemara itself didn't verbalize, but it was essentially what my taima de Rabbi Shimon, what's the reason for Rabbi Shimon? And here, so the Gemara is responding to that unasked question. And that's why we have a house marking with the point facing up, indicating an answer or a response to that, we'll call, hidden question. So the Gemara will give us an answer to what is the basis of Rabbi Shimon's insistence on Yitzika Bezar, Bekoin, and not Bezar. The house form will flip over, and that you'll notice already at the top line of Yud Tes Amud Aleph. In this sukkah, the flipped over house will indicate a question. So in the meantime, we want to note once again the psukim from Vayikra Perek Beis. We've included these psukim in the inside margin. You can see Vayikra Beis and a Posuk Aleph, and Beis are featured. In Posuk Aleph, let's get a flavor of the psukim by reading them together. The Posuk Aleph says, V'nefesh kisakuv korban mincho l'Hashem, when an individual comes to offer a meal offering, soilusia korbonoi, it's made of solas, flour, v'yotzak ala shemen, v'nosan ala levoino, there's a pouring of oil and a placing of Lavona spice, Vehevia el Bnei Aaron Akonim. In Posuk Beis, this is the first time you see the appearance of Bnei Aaron, the Kohanim, and it says, Vekomats Mishom Lo Kumtso Misoto Mishamno Al Kolo Venos Victor Akain Esaz Koroso Mizbecho Ishe Reach Nichoach Lashem. According to Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara will tell us in a moment, in Posuk Beis, where you see the appearance of Bnei Aaron Akohanim, it is to be understood not only as applying to that which follows, namely the action of Vikomats, and you can see that in Posuk Beis, following the expression Be'aron HaKoyanim, you see Vikomats, but it goes also on that which was earlier, namely in Posuk Aleph. And what did we see in Posuk Aleph? We saw a reference to V'yotzak, to Yitzika, which is our topic. So according to Rabbi Shimon, the requirement of Kohanim extends backwards also, to include that which was mentioned before. There's a term that's used to explain this, and that's called Mikra Nidrosh Lefonov Ulachrov. The Mikra, the Pasuk, is darshaned, is explained, as referring to that which comes before and comes after. And that's what the Gemara explains now, right now, to explain Shitas Rabbi Shimon. So reading that in the Gemara, and as we mentioned, the house form with the point facing up indicates an answer, a response to the question of what's the reason for Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon b'nei Aaron ha-Kohanim, Mikra Nidrosh Lefonov Ula Achrov. The Pasuk is explained as referring to that which appeared before. That's Lefonov, and that's a reference to V'yotzak. And Ula Achrov, that's a reference to V'komats Misham, to the taking of the komets. The Gemara now asks a question, and you'll notice that this is a long question. Before going further, though, with the question, it's noteworthy that when trying to determine what is the reason for Rabbi Shimon, at the bottom of Yud Ches Omid Aleph, we indicated to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text a little house form with a 1 in it. We can say that this is really the first attempt or the first stage in determining what is the Hesber for Rabbi Shimon's insistence on Kahuna for Yitzika. There will be a number 2 as we go down our new Omid, Yud Tes Omid Aleph. You'll notice a 2, a number of lines down from the top, also to the right-hand side of the Gemara text. In the meantime, though, we have a question. The Gemara asks, "V'sava Rabbi Shimon Mikra Nidrosh Lefonov Uli Achrov?" Is it so that Rabbi Shimon holds that the pasuk is darshaned in both directions? The Ha'Tanya, we're going to present a source. The source has nothing to do with a mincha, but we will demonstrate in the following source that Rabbi Shimon does not darshan lefonov. He doesn't attach an expression that appears in the middle of a pasuk to that which appeared before. So in this source, Rabbi Shimon will appear in the latter part of the source. You'll notice that his name is dashed, underlined, so as to draw your attention to it. That's a diagonal dashed underline later in the source. The source, as you can see, is in a frame, a Tanaic source. To distinguish the use of the frame is to distinguish it from the rest of the Amoraic literature. So the Gemara is asking, we see in the following source that Rabbi Shimon does not darshan lefonov. And eventually, after raising this question, then we will see the problem with the first answer as to how Reb Shimon sees kahuna through is needed for Yitzhika, if he arrived at that conclusion by darshaning lefonav, by connecting kahuna to that which appeared before, namely Yitzhika, that will not be accurate. That won't remain, because we see he does not darshan in that fashion. So the Gemara asks, Vahatanya, what we see in the following source, which deals with the dinim of Kabbalah Saddam. And source begins, Veloka hakoyin midam hachatos ve'etzboi ve'nosan al karnoi samizbeach. Be'etzboi velokach. The expression be'etzbo, you can see, is the word etzbo is dashed, underlined in the pasuk, and you see velokach at the beginning of the pasuk also dashed, underlined. This is an example of mikra nidrash lefonov. Be'etzbo velokach, as we said, that's mikra nidrash lefonov. The word etzba is an expression that indicates, beyond the literal translation, it indicates right hand. Melamed shelo tehe kabola elo biyamin. Since velokach hakoy midah means kabola sadam, and the word etzba means right hand, so we are explaining that we learn from here that you must use the right hand to hold the vessel that will receive the blood after, right as the animal is slaughtered. Reading that again, melamed shelo tehe kabola elo biyamin. There's a rule that wherever the word etzba or kahuna appears, it indicates right hand. And here we have the word etzba, and that is to indicate the right hand. Then the pasuk also has the words ve'etzbo'oi ve'nosan. That too we have dashed, underlined, two lines above this. And this is an example of taking a word and darshaning it forward. In other words, attaching etzba to the word venosan. Venosan nesina sadam, this is the blood application on the mizbeach. Melamed shelo tehe nesino elo biyamin. From this, we learn that the blood applications to the altar must be done with the right hand. Homer Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon challenges this, and he says, V'chinemar yad bekabola. The word yad is associated with etzba. We explained before that that's a reference to right-handedness. So Rabbi Shimon is asking, does the pasuk insist on right-handedness when it comes to Kabbalah? And Kabbalah Saddam, the receiving of the blood, was something found before the yad or etzba word. So Rabbi Shimon is saying that the pasuk is not insisting on right-handedness for Kabbalah Saddam, because the only way to arrive at that conclusion would be by darshaning lefonov, by taking the word etzba and connecting it with that which was before it, namely velokach. But I don't do that, says Rabbi Shimon. Hoyo velo ne'amar yad bekabola, since the expression yad or etzba is not associated with Kabbalah Saddam, because ein mikra nidrash lefonov, kibel b'smol kosher, and receiving the blood while holding the vessel in one's left hand would be legitimate. The Omar Abaye, points out what we've already used as our explanation. Abaye says, b'mikra nidrash lefonov l'achrov komifligi. The underlying machlokis in this Tanaic source between the first opinion and Rabbi Shimon is whether you darshan a posuk not only following, not only taking the, we'll call it the key word and associating it that which comes after, but do you also associate it with that which comes before? That's their machlokis. And in the parentheses, the text would have read that Rabbi Shimon holds that la'achrov it's nidrash and lefonov it's not nidrash. So if that's the case, we come to the end of the long question. If Rabbi Shimon then represents a school of thought that says ein hamikra nidrash lefonov, then how is it that Rabbi Shimon is insistent upon yitzika being done by koyhanim? Because as far as our first approach is concerned, in order to come to that conclusion, you would have had to say mikra nidrash lefonov. But Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold by that approach. Elo. Now, number two. Hainu taimo de Rebbe Shimon. The reason for Rebbe Shimon that a zar is posel le yitzika veheviya. Now this, if you notice the posik that we had included in the bottom of Yud Chesam and Beis, you can easily glance back to the lower inside margin. That's the beginning of posik Beis. It says veheviya, and the vav of that word, vav moisif al inyan rishon. That means that you take the information in posuk beis, and the information of posuk beis is in a sense an addition to that which was in posuk aleph. And in posuk aleph there was a reference to yitzika, and posuk beis mentions kohanim. So you say that Pasuk Beis is adding to that which was before. So if the Yitzhika was mentioned before, and it's tied into Pasuk Beis, where Kohanim are mentioned, I therefore understand that, just like in Pasuk Beis, Kohanim are mentioned, understand that Kohanim are needed also for that which was in Pasuk Aleph. Question. Notice how the house flips over so that it helps you keep track of the back and forth nature of our discussion. V'savar Rabbi Shimon Vav Moisif Al Inyan Rishon. Does he really hold that? And you'll notice we have a long question here that you could see to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text the length of the question. The Gemara is now challenging what we said in number two. That does Rabbi Shimon really hold this? That Vav Moisif Al Inyan Rishon Elo Me'ato. Well, if that be the case, we have in Vayikra Perek Aleph Pasuk Hey. A Gemara will quote a pasuk. Let us note that in pasuk Dalid, which is written on the inside margin of your Gemara, the pasuk made reference to Smichas Yadayim. That's the placing of the hands of the person on the head of his korban, of the sacrifice that he's bringing. We can read it together. The pasuk says, "Pasuk Dalit v'somach yodoy al roish ha'olah v'nirtzo loy lechapir olav." And pasuk Hay says v'shochat. There's a vav here at this pasuk. It says v'shochat es ben habokur lefnei Hashem v'hikrivu bnei Aharon haKohanim es Adam. And you see the same style here. V'hikrivu is the bnei Aharon. They then do the matnas dam. So now, taking into consideration the awareness of these psukim, now let's see the question. Is it really so that Rav Shimon holds that the Vav attaches that which is before to that which comes now? Elo me'ato. V'shochat es ben habokor, v'hikrivu b'nei Aaron akoyanim es hadam, v'zorku es hadam. That's what it says in the pasuk. And we know that this means mikabola v'eilech mitzvas kehuna, that from v'ikrivu is a reference to, we'll say, to kabola sadam. So from the point of kabola sadam onwards, you need to have kohanim. Melamed al shchita shekshera bazar. This teaches me that any stage that occurs before kabola sadam, that is okay with a non-Kohen, namely the slaughtering, which is obviously before receiving of the blood, that can be done by a non-Kohen. Now, Eile Rabbi Shimon Vav Moisif Al Inyan Rishon, if it were so that Rabbi Shimon holds that the Vav, in effect, connects that which you're learning now to that which was before, well, Shchita, Hachi nami bazar te psula? Are you going to say that Rav Shimon will hold that a non-Kohen who does the slaughtering will render it unfit? No one holds that. Everyone agrees that Shechita bazar is kosher. But if you're going to insist on Rav Shimon holding Vav, Moisif, Alini, and Rishon, if you just go back four lines to where we have some dotted underline expressions, you see that it says Vehikrivu b'nei Aharon. If the Vav there is telling me, connect this with that which was before. What was immediately before? Vishachat, that which we see was also dashed, underlined. So if you say Vav is Moisif Alinyan Rishon, so Vehikrivu B'in Aaron is going to draw to it also Shechita. And you're going to end up saying that Shechita must be done by a Kohen. And we know that that's not true. So the question right now is, what is the basis of Shitas Rabbi Shimon by Yitzika, holding Yitzika Bizar as Puzzle? The Gemara says, in general, he does Darshan Vav Moisif Al Inyan Rishon. However, Shaini Hosam, in the case of Shechita, it's different. Diomar Kro V'somach V'shochad. In Pasuk Dalid, there's a reference to the placing of the hands on the head of the animal, and that's why we included in our Pasuk citation, Pasuk Dalit, so that you can see the positioning of the Psukim. In Pasuk Dalit, there's a reference to the placing of the hands. The Shochat is the subject of Pasuk Hey. Ma smicha bezorim, just like smicha is clearly done by non-Kohanim, af shchita bezorim, so too shchita can be done by non-Kohanim. It may be pointed out that smicha is done by the owner of the korban, so the owner is not necessarily a kohen. So therefore, the Gemara can say with assuredness, just like smicha is done by zorim, so too shchita can be done by zorim. So let's go over the main point. As far as our sugya is concerned, we can go back to the number 2 and say that the basis of yitzika, pouring of oil on a meal offering, according to Rabbi Shimon, if done by a non-Kohen, is possible. That's because of this idea of Vav Moisif Al Inyan Rishon, and this throws back to the psukim that were quoted at the bottom of Yud Ches Omid Beis, where you saw in Pasuk Beis it said Ve'via El Bnei Aaron, and that is to be connected with that which was before, namely V'yotzak Aleha. Let's just make something clear. That's not by virtue of Mikra Nidrash Lefonav, but rather that's through the power of the Vav. The letter Vav in the word Vehevia connects the Pasuk Bey's reference to Kohanim with that which was mentioned before. So in general, we are saying that that is the way Reb Shimon looks at Psukim. As far as the most recent point of a suggestion that Kohanim are going to therefore be needed for Shechita, that's not so. That's because there's another drosha that offsets that, namely the smichus, the juxtaposition of Pasuk Dalid with Pasuk Hei. With regard to Pasuk Dalid, smicha, that's clearly done by non-Kohanim. Therefore, shechita is also done by non-Kohanim. The Gemara asks, though, notice how the house form is flipping back and forth. E ma smicha bebailim af shechita bebailim. If you're telling me to learn shechita from smicha, then let's go all the way. If just like smicha is done by the owner places his hands on the sacrifice that he is bringing, are you going to tell me that shechita must be done by the owner? We never heard anything like that. The Gemara answers, as far as that detail question, that particular point, we have an answer to that. This is in a long answer marking. You can see is noted to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text a tuf that you find in a little house form with a vertical dashed line. All of these lines form the answer. So the Gemara says, as far as your last question is concerned, we can rebuff that. Hahu lo motzis amris. To suggest that shechita must be done by the owner, that you cannot say kal v'chomer through kal v'chomer logic. Uma zrika de iker kapora lo baya bailim. Mind you, the main aspect of the atonement, the sprinkling of the blood application to the altar, does not require owner. In fact, zrika is done by the kohanim. Shechita de lav iker kapora lo kol shekein. Shechita, the slaughtering, which is not the main point of atonement, certainly you would not need the owner. The chitema, you might try to say, listen, this kind of logic has a hole in it. Ain donin efsher mishei efsher. You can't determine shechita, which has the potential of, yes, being done by the owner, from the case of zrika, which is clear, it's clear you don't, you cannot have the owner doing that, because in the case of zrika, the psukim are clear that you have to have the kohanim doing the zrika. So, you can't use a kavachomer from a case where the owner is impossible in order to determine the case of shechita, or the stage of shechita where the owner in fact is a possibility. So if you try to rebuff the Kal Vachomer, I have an answer anyway. Goli Rachmona v'Yom Kippurim. The Torah in the case of Yom Kippur reveals that v'shochat espar hachatos asher loy. This posuk is a reference to the Kohen Gadol bringing his cow offering on Yom Kippur. That cow is an animal brought from the the financial resources of the Kohen Gadol himself. And in that case, you have a situation where who is shechting the par hachatos? The Kohen Gadol himself. It's a one-time example of an owner being obligated to slaughter his sacrifice. Michlal, we can infer the Shechita b'Alma that all other cases of sacrificial slaughtering, lo bo'inon b'ilim. So that, just to go over the last point, this what we call the long answer, the suggestion that shechita must be done by the Bailim in the final analysis, if you don't like the Kal Vachomer, where you have this posuk to fall back on, which says that only in the case of the Yom Kippur cow offering do you have an owner in effect slaughtering his sacrifice. In all other cases, an owner is not necessary to slaughter his sacrifice. But as in general, when learning a daf gemara or a sugya, one should not lose sight of the forest for the trees and realize that we have been dealing most recently with explaining Shitas Rabbi Shimon as to why he insists on Yitzika being done only by Kohanim, and we established in stage 2 of our Gemara, he learns that from the Vehevia Vov Moisif Al Inyan Rishon approach. We now, as we look on in the Gemara, we have a slash mark indicating that that which follows is a new idea. We also have a rare appearance of the firebox marking. The reason for this marking is that in this particular case, Shitas Rav will preoccupy a rather long piece of Gemara, so we've highlighted his name. Before going further into the Gemara, the nosei, the topic, milim, words, she moirim, that teach al ikuva, that some aspect of the sacrificial process is binding, that without it, you will not fulfill your requirements. We will see references to words in the Torah, the word Torah, and the word chukah, that where these words appear, it indicates that whatever is under discussion is binding. Under the mivneh heading, we see a new geometric form as far as this sugya is concerned, a crown form. The crown will be used as shlavim, stages, behavonas divrei rav, in our attempt to understand what rav is trying to say. I bo'inon Torah v'chuka o shesagi b'chad. Do you need both words to indicate that the issue at hand is binding? Or even if one of the two words appear, that will be sufficient to indicate that this is binding, whatever act or stage of process you are discussing. We are going to notice some more markings in this sukkah, in addition to the crown marking, which features, we'll call it stages in understanding Rav. The trapezoid or volcano shape will appear, and we've indicated that this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. We saw the use of a ma'akav approach in the previous sugya with the house form flipping back and forth. Since this is a new sugya, so we, in accordance with the rules of the marking system, so as to distinguish between different sugyas, we change the markings where, as we've mentioned in the past, no particular shape has any individual significance. In this case, we'll simply use the volcano form to indicate the back and forth nature of this new sugya. With the narrow part facing up, that will represent kushyos, questions, and with the narrow part facing down, tshuvos, responses. In addition to that, you'll see a number of words with a double underline with dots in it. These words that will be highlighted, noisim shonim, different topics that the Gemara will be citing as a basis of the questions as they come along. So if you just scan ahead in the Gemara will be asking from the likes of Nozir, Toida, Mitzayra, Yom Kippur, Mincha, Lechem Aponim, a bunch of different topics in which we will bring to question whatever we thought might be the rule stated beforehand. So let's see the sugya now, with bearing in mind that our sugya deals with the issue of when do I know that something is ma'akev? When do I know that a particular point or process is binding, without which the korban will not be acceptable? Omar Rav, kol mokoim shenemar Torah v'chuka eino elo la'akev. Where you see these expressions, the Torah is trying to communicate that the issue is binding. This is our first stage. You'll see a crown marking. If you skim down the page, try to find the next one. At that point, you'll see it says something different than what we say here. At this point, the kosaka daitoch, we think right now, tarti baya, that you need both expressions, Torah and chukah. Skip down a few lines where the next crown marking is, and you can see, ela, oi Torah, oi chukah, either or. That, by the way, will be modified as well as we go later in the Gemara, but since at that point the Gemara is suggesting you don't need both words, we're not going to see an additional crown marking as we go on, even though there will be that too will be slightly adjusted. But as far as the big picture is concerned, stage one in trying to understand Rav suggests that you will need both words to indicate that something is ma'akev. That's that the latter stage, we'll call it stage two of the Gemara, we will change our position and say that something can be binding even if you don't have both words. So let's see. At this point, we're saying that you need both words to indicate something is binding, kidichtiv, and we have a pasuk to illustrate that. Zos chukas ha-Torah. In this pasuk, you see the word chuka and the word Torah. The Gemara now challenges, and in the parentheses, simin natatz yakmeel, this is a simin that is, in effect, highlighting the different topics that the Gemara will be citing as we go along. And with our double underline with dots in it, in effect, we have highlighted the different expressions that are represented here, so that you have seven topics that the Gemara will be citing as it goes on. And if you count the double underlines with dots in it, you should also come out with seven such words. The Gemara asks, Vahare Nozir, Delo Ksiva Be Elo Torah, in the case of the nozir, person who abstained through a vow from wine consumption, as a nozir. The Torah only uses the word Torah, and yet v'omar rav tenufa b'nozir ma'akfa. The need to waive that which the nozir brings at the end of his nozir period, the waiving is binding. The waiving of the sacrifice that he brings at the end of his nozir period. So you see that even without both words, something can be binding. The Gemara responds, answers, Shiny Hossam, the case of nozir is different, that in general you need both words. However, Kevan dechsiv, Kein Yaseh, since the Torah uses this expression as well, Kein Yaseh, Keman dechsiva bu chuka domi. It's as if the word chuka appears, and therefore the rule holds that you need both expressions, Torah and Chukah, in order for something to be binding. In the case of Nozir, even though the word Chukah doesn't appear, Kenyasa does appear to take its place. Question, Varei Toida, the Todah sacrifice, the Lok Siva Be Ela Torah, you have just the word Torah, Utnan, and it's taught Arba O Minim Shebetoida Ma'akvin Ze Eze, which means that the Todah sacrifice, which in addition to the animal that's brought, there are also four different types of loaves, of baked loaves that are brought, a total of 40 loaves, but the 40 is essentially made up of 4 times 10, 4 different loaves, 10 of each. And this Mishnah teaches us that you must have all 4 types in order to fulfill your Todah requirement. So here you have the concept of Ma'akvin. And you don't have the word Chukah in addition. The Gemara answers, Shiny Toida de Iskish Lenozir. Toda is exceptional because it is compared to Nozir. Dichtiv, where do we see them compared? The Pasuk says, Al Zevach Toidas Shlomov. The Omar Mor, Shlomov Lerabbi Shalmi Nozir. The word, this Pasuk that refers to the Korban Toda also makes a reference to the Nozir's Korban. And just like we saw by the Nozir, you have the Nozir requirements are binding, and we said that because you had the expression Kein Ya'aseh, understand similarly with regard to the Todah, it too is binding. Its aspects, in this case the 4 varieties, must be present. Question, Vaharei Mitzorah, the Lok Siv Bei Elo Torah. You have the case of the Mitzorah, and you have once again only one of the 2 expressions, the word Torah. Utnan, and the Mishnah teaches with regard to the Mitzorah, Arbo Minim Shebetzorah Ma'akvin Ze Eze. The 4 elements that are necessary for the Mitzorah purification process, Rashi makes a reference to them. They are Eitz Erez, Shni Talas, Ezov, and the Tziporim. Without getting into any details, simply for our purposes, we're referring to the 4 elements needed for the purification of the Mitzorah. Each one is binding. So, how do you explain this halacha in light of Rav's comment that you need both words to create a binding situation? Here, even with one word, it's binding. The Gemara says, "Shiny Hossam." The case of Mitzora is different. Kevon dechsiv zois tiyeh teras haMitzora. Since the pasuk says that in the case of the Mitzorah, keman dechsiv bei chuka domi, the zos tiyeh expression takes the place of chuka, and it's as if chuka is also written. So Rav's rule stands in the meantime, that you need both expressions, and even in the case of Mitzorah, you have a reference to both expressions of Torah and chuka. Even though chuka itself doesn't appear, you do have zos tiyeh to take its place. Question, Vare Yom HaKippurim, Delo Ksiv Be Elo Chuka. Up till now, we've seen examples of topics that have only the word Torah, and yet there was bindingness. Here you have only Chukah and Utnan, and it says with regard to the Yom Kippur ceremony, Shnei Seire Yom HaKippurim Me'akvin Ze Eze. The two goats that are part of the Yom Kippur atonement process are binding one on the other, namely that you have to have both in order to fulfill the Yom Kippur goat requirement. So once again, we have a problem. Rav said you need both words, according to what we at least thought, and here you have only one word, namely chukah, and yet the element is binding. We should have noted in our introduction, but you'll notice that at each stage we've also included under the word ma'akva, a diagonal dashed underline, simply to highlight the idea of the item being binding, even though in each one of these cases we had only one word. At this point, though, at the point that we raise the Yom Kippur question, we now change course. Ella, and that's where we have the second crown marking. Ella oi Torah oi Chukah. Either word, or Torah or Chukah, either one will be sufficient to communicate the idea of something being binding. So if this be true, then all of the original questions really would fall away as well, because we had the case of Nozir, we saw Todah, and we saw Mitzorah. In all of those cases, we saw only the word Torah. And now you're telling me, in fact, if you see the word Torah, that's sufficient to indicate something is binding. However, we're not at the end of the show yet. Question: V'harei shar korbanos dichsivu Torah v'lo me'akvi. In the case of other korbanos, you can have the word Torah, but some of the aspects of the other korbanos are in fact not binding. Rashi cites as an example of this that you have the expression, for example, Zois Hatur Li'olo L'Mincha L'Chatos L'Osham, and in the case of the Osham, if its innards are not sacrificed or not burnt on the altar, the Osham is nevertheless still kosher. So even though you have the word Torah, there nevertheless is flexibility, if you will, with regard to that aspect of the Osham, that its innards are not binding. In the case of the Mincha, the Torah talks about the need to do Hagosha, the drawing of the Mincha, the bowl of the flour, to the corner of the Mizbeach, and yet we know that if Hagosha is not done, it's still kosher. So that you see the appearance of the word Torah in the case of Sha'ar Korbanos, as Rashi points out, where Rashi quotes the pasuk, and nevertheless we find different aspects not binding by the other Korbanos. So the Gemara answers, and we're continuing to use the volcano form, flipping back and forth to give the flavor of the question-answer style. So we have a question just now regarding the appearance of the word Torah, and yet it's not binding by other korbanos. So the Gemara answers a new approach. In your mind's eye, you might, for all marking enthusiasts out there, you might have wanted to note here a new crown form. We decided not to use it because the most recent crown indicated one word is sufficient to create bindingness, and here it's modified. Torah baya chukah. The chukah lo baya Torah, which means that the word Torah on its own will not communicate that the idea of bindingness. Torah alone will not; it will need the word chukah. However, if you see the word chukah, that can establish that something is binding even without the word Torah. The Gemara asks, can you say, let's not forget that all of this discussion is an attempt to deal with Rav, who said a rule at the beginning of this section of Gemara. At this point now, we've considerably modified what he originally said. And now that, can that really be? And we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, which will be helpful to connect this point with that which you saw earlier. The Gemara is asking now, V'ha Torah V'chuka Ka'omar. Rav said that you need both words to create bindingness. And now you're telling me that Chuka does not need Torah. But Rav originally said that, it seemed to say that Chuka does need Torah. The Gemara answers, Hachi Ka'omar. Thusly, we should understand Rav's original comment. Af al gav dechsiv Torah, even though the Torah uses this word, Torah, iksiva chuka in, the eloi loi. Only if the word chuka also appears, then something will be binding. If the word chuka does not appear in addition, if you're left with the word Torah alone, it won't be binding. The Gemara asks, "Barei mincha dechsiv bo chuka." You have the word chuka in the context of a korban mincha. Rashi quotes the pasuk, "Kol zocher b'vnei Aaron yochlena chok olam." So you have in the case of a mincha, the word chok or chuka appears, and yet Rav himself says. We've circled Rav to indicate that, just to sort of draw your attention to the fact that Rav is the center of our discussion. Rav himself says, "Kol mokoim shehichsir hakosuv b'toras mincha, eino elo la'akev." This means wherever the Torah teaches halachas regarding the korban mincha, for example, in Parshas Vayikra, hichsir hakosav means repeats itself, and the Torah then goes ahead and repeats the law in Parshas Tzav, which is the following parsha after Parshas Vayikra. You read Parshas Tzav, so wherever the Torah repeats in Parshas Tzav that which was already mentioned in Parshas Vayikra, then it's me'akev. So, if that be the case, we can infer, hichzir in, lo hichzir lo. If there's a repeat, then it's binding. If there's no repeat, it's not binding, even though you have the word chuka. So, the question then is, if we just back up a little bit with our markings, the last answer that we had, namely the last inverted volcano form, we saw the comment made that even though you might have the word Torah, you've got to have the word chuka. Chuka establishes bindingness. Then we ask from the case of mincha, from this piece of Gemara, especially where we see Rav's name is circled, it seems to say that chuka is not that which establishes bindingness, but rather the repetition of the section of the Torah, the repetition of the halach of mincha, establishes bindingness. The Gemara answers, Shaini hosam. In the case of mincha, it's different. So let's say, in general, chuka does establish bindingness. But in the case of mincha, it's different. Dechi ksiva chuka, a'achi lo ksiva. Where chuka appears in the case of the korban mincha, it's not dealing with the elements necessary for the offering of the mincha, it's dealing with the consumption, the eating of the mincha. Bear in mind, or take careful note, that we have a little one over here. This one represents a first stage in this particular piece of logic. So at this point, the Gemara attempts to deflect the chuka problem in the case of mincha by saying that the word chuka is positioned in a, we'll call it in a weak context or a weak section from which we can't derive the idea of some element being binding, because the word chuka is after the mincha is already complete and it's at a point that they're already eating it. So how do I know in the case of mincha that something is binding? There I don't rely on the word chukah, but rather I rely on this other rule of Rav, that if in the case of mincha, if some aspect of the mincha process is repeated, then I know it's binding. The Gemara asks on this last point, the fact that chukah in the case of mincha is by eating, does that really derail it from showing that something is, that it's limited to that topic, to the issue of eating? In the case of the lechem aponim, this was the 12 breads that are sometimes translated as the show breads, the breads that sat in the heichal from week to week in the heichal of the Beis HaMikdash. The word chukah appears in the Torah with regard to the lechem aponim, and it says, Rashi quotes the pasuk. It says, "V'chluhu b'mokum kodesh ki kodesh kodoshim hu lo me'ishei Hashem chok olam." So you have a pasuk that you've got the word chok in it, the word chukah or chok, and it's in the context of achila. And yet, utnan shnei sdorim me'akvin ze'ezeh, shnei bozichin me'akvin ze'ezeh, hasdorim v'abozichin me'akvin ze'ezeh. In the case of the lechem aponim, it says chukah in the case of eating, and yet all the different aspects of the lechem aponim are binding. The shnei storim, the need for the two sets, the two stacks of bread, six breads in each stack. You've got to have both stacks. You've got to have both bozichin there, both receptacles that held the lavona. And you've got to have the breads together with the lavona, namely on the table, the stacks of breads, and the two bozichin are ma'akev zedzeh. You're not going to fulfill the mitzvah of lechem aponim unless you have all of its elements. Ella, what do we see from that kol hecho d'ksiv achila, where you see the word chukah attached to achila? It's not limited to that. It doesn't derail it from the whole topic. Akula milsaksiva. The chukah expression refers to the entire topic. This brings back the question. What we have to do at this point, just to make sure that we're following things, we had a few lines up, a question was raised. The line before the Rav's name was circled, we indicated a question. In the case of Mincha, you've got the word chukah, and the question had been raised that, well, you've got the word chukah, but according to Rav, chukah is not the binding factor. We tried to answer number one by saying, really, chukah is binding, but in the case of the mincha, the word chukah appears in the context of eating. At this point, we're saying, so what? The word chukah appears in the context of eating. That doesn't limit it or take it out of the rest of the topic. So the question is let's say we're resurrecting the question. You've got the case of mincha. You've got the word chukah. And you were telling me up till that point in the Gemara that chukah is sufficient to create bindingness. So how do you fit that in with the fact that Rav teaches this other rule of only if the Torah repeats itself by mincha is that aspect binding. But the word chukah in and of itself is not sufficient. The Gemara answers, once again, shiny hosam. The case of mincha is different. And we have to explain why in the case of mincha is chukah not binding. In general, chukah is binding. Wherever you see a topic and you see the word chukah, understand it is binding. Why in the case of mincha is it not binding? Shiny hosam, the Omar Kro, mi girsa u mi sham no. This is in Perek Beis, Posuk Tes Zayin. And we learn from this, Geres v'shemen me'akvin, v'ein dover achir me'akev. only the geres and shemen. Geres has to do with the flour, and the shemen is the oil. Only those things are ma'akev, and nothing else is ma'akev. Let's take a look at the Rashi at the bottom of Omid Aleph. Yutes Omid Aleph, v'shayni hasam, gabi mincha. By mincha, it's different. Lahochi lo havyo chuka dida ikuva. The reason for, in the case of mincha, that chuka, which in general does show something is binding, here in mincha it will not be binding. Mishum dechsiv mi girsa umi shamna. The Torah could have written just geres and shemen. Uksiv, it adds haze to these words. Migirsa umi shamna. Shma mino. We derive from this the following. Hochi ko'omar. Girsa sholem. V'shimno sholem. The full amount of flour, the full amount of oil, shim chiser kol shu posel. If any is missing from the required amount, it renders it unfit. Umi de itzrich lemichtav lahochi, from the fact that the Torah repeated itself for this purpose, shma mino chuka di do lav chuka. It's showing me that lav dafka, according to another girsa, is showing that chuka, in the case of the mincha, is not functioning in its usual capacity. Continuing in the Gemara, the second line from the top of Omid Beis, Gufa, Omar Rav, this is a quote from what we saw Rav mention that we had circled on Omid Aleph, and we have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with an indication to look at Omid Aleph, and you can see on the lower part of Omid Aleph where a corresponding star appears, and you will see from that point this quote is coming. So we had mentioned before that Rav said, "Komokum shichsir lo hakosuv b'Torah mincha eino elo la'akev," where the Torah repeats itself. And we mentioned in Parshas Vayikra, the Torah has laws concerning the meal offering, and in Parshas Tzav, there are items that are repeated. The repetition shows me that this is binding. Ushmuel Omar Geres v'Shemen Ma'akvin v'Ein Dover Acher Ma'akev. Shmuel at this point seems to disregard Rav's teaching and says that Geres and Shemen are binding. In other words, that Geres and Shemen are that which was repeated, and that's binding, and nothing else. Even though something else may have been repeated, nevertheless, Shmuel is telling me the other repeated items are not binding. The Gemara asks, is that really so? Shmuel afagav de tona beikro lo ma'akva. And is it so that even though something is repeated, something may be repeated, it's not binding? If the Torah repeats something, it's repeating it to tell me that it is binding. So the question is, and what's the difference between Rav and Shmuel? These are two different expressions. This, of course, is very vague. The Gemara, though, as it goes on, will explain itself. That's the issue of the issue of malo kumtso bekumtso, which we can tell you right now, has to do with the making of a vessel that would contain the amount that one has in his handful. This is the point of difference between komiflegi, means they argue, Rav and Shmuel. Desanyo. This will become clear as we go on. Rav Sovar, Desanya. We have a Tanaic source in the frame. Malo kumtso, bekumtso. These are expressions that are found in the Torah with regard to the taking of the handful of the meal offering. From this we learn, Shelo yase mido lakoimetz, that you're not supposed to make a vessel that contains the amount that ordinarily is in one's handful. And rather, you must take literally a handful of meal offering. So this halacha of shelo yase mida lakometz, this halacha, the question is this an example of something that is repeated? Now, we want to emphasize that the fact that you have these two expressions, melo kumtso and bikumtso, that in and of itself does not indicate a repetition of the halacha. Rashi points out the fact that you have the idea of handful with these two different expressions, the two expressions are taught using a slight change in language. Notice, melo kumtso and bikumtso, they're two different expressions. The fact that Torah changes its expression, that in and of itself communicates the idea of not making a vessel holding the amount of handful. So that you need the double expression simply to communicate the basic idea of do not make a vessel. The question is this halacha, is this law binding? In order to establish that, we have to investigate, is there another pasuk that would then constitute a repetition? So, just to review that last point, below kumtso and bikumtso does not represent a doubling to lead me to the conclusion of binding. The double expression here features a change in expression to communicate the basic idea that you should not make a vessel with handful equivalent capacity. Now the question is, once I know that you should not make a vessel with handful capacity, is that binding? Is that rule binding? Or if I went ahead anyway and used a vessel, instead of taking it in my hand, literally, would that still be kosher? So Rav Savar, and we're looking now to highlight the point of difference or the point of controversy between Rav and Shmuel. Rav Savar ho nami tona beikra. This issue concerning do not use a vessel is something that is repeated. Dichtiv, it says in Parshas Shmini, although it's not Parshas Tzav, but nevertheless it's something repeated. It says in Parshas Shmini, dealing with a one-time in history event, it says, this pasuk appears in the we'll call it dedication day of the Mishkan. It says there, "Vayakrev es hamincha vayamale chapoi mimeno." They brought the meal offering and he filled his hand full with it. So vayamale chapo is the same thing as melo kumtso, and it indicates the hand. So once again, you see the idea of a non-vessel that was expressed by the expressions melo kumtso bekumtso, non-vessel, and now again non-vessel is referred to here in Parsha Shmini. So it's doubled. Shmuel says that in general things that are doubled in fact do create a binding situation. However, this being that the posuk that we just cited from Vayikra Perek Tes, which is in Parsha Shmini, being that it was a one-time in history event, it does not serve to establish a precedent. Doros Mishoa lo yalfinon, halachas that would apply to future generations from something that was one time in history, lo yalfinon, we don't derive things for the future from something that was Mishoa, one time event. The Gemara now asks, is that really so? V'lo yolev Shmuel doros mishah? Before going on in the Gemara, we're trying to introduce here in this particular sugya a unique attempt at marking. We have featured Shmuel with a diamond. Later on the page, you'll notice Rav is featured in a diamond. On the outside margin in our Mivneh heading, we have Shmuel and Rav indicated. Simun Zeh, this marking, Mar'eh, tries to show Sheketa Habo, the Birur, Shita Shmuel, V'achar Kach Rav. That this section that Sheketa Habo Bo Levarer comes to clarify. Shitas Shmuel, so that all of the we'll call it the next few lines till we get to Rav are focused on Shmuel, and then when we get to the next diamond, the Gemara will be focusing on Shitas Rav. So, in the meantime, we're going to turn back to Shmuel. The Gemara is now asking, is that really so, that Shmuel does not establish precedent from that which was one time in history? V'lo yolev Shmuel doro yismisha v'hotnan. We have the following source. This source deals with the topic of service vessels in the Beis HaMikdash, Kli Shoreis. Some Kli Shoreis were designed for liquids, and some were designed for non-liquid items. The issue is, can a vessel designed for one type of substance sanctify the other type of substance? So it says here, Kli Halach Mikachines Halach, vessels designed for liquids sanctify liquids. Umidas yovesh mekachin es hayovesh, and dry measures are capable of sanctifying that which is dry. Ve'en kli alach mekachin es hayovesh, v'lo midas hayovesh mekachin es alach. Vessels designed for liquids cannot sanctify that which is dry, nor that which is designed, a vessel designed as a measure for dry substances, cannot sanctify that which is lach, liquid. The Omar Shmuel, we've dashed underlined Shmuel so as to draw our attention to the fact that he is at the center of our discussion. And Shmuel himself said, Lo shonu elo midos. This, we'll call it exclusionary phenomenon, applies only when you're dealing with vessels designed for measuring. Avol Mizrokos, Mizrokos is the name of the vessel used for receiving the blood after an animal was sacrificed. So a Mizrok, as is obvious, is a vessel designed for liquid. It says, Avol Mizrokos Mikachin. Mizrokos can be Mikadesh, can sanctify the Yovesh. Dichtiv, and a posuk is cited. The posuk is cited in the context of the Nesiim, the heads of each tribe, as is featured in Parshas Noso, brought sacrifices at the dedication of the Mishkan. And this was an issue of Sho'ah, a one-time event in history. And it says in the case of the Nesiim, Shnehem Malayim Soilis. Shnehem, that's a reference to the Mizrokos. They were filled with Soilis. Soilis is a dry substance. And we see from this that we learn Doros, future generations, according to Shmuel. We're learning the idea that Mizrokos or Mekadesh Yavesh from the Mizrokos that were Mekadesh the Soilis in the case of the Nesiim, which was a one-time event. The Gemara answers as follows. In general, Shmuel will not learn Sha'a, he will not learn Doros Misha'a. In the case of the Nesiim, it's different. The Tono Be Kro Tresar Zimnin, the Posuk that features the sacrifices brought by the heads of the Shvatim, by the Nesiim, it's repeated 12 times. Something that's repeated so many times can, even though it was a one-time event in history, can serve as a precedent. But in general, as we said, Shmuel will not learn Doros Misha'a. And as a result of that, we can go back and just review the point of difference between Rav and Shmuel had to do with this halacha of insistence upon the taking of the handful literally in the hand and not being allowed to make a vessel containing that equivalent or having that capacity. According to Rav, the taking of the handful must be done only in the handful and not with a vessel equivalent. And Shmuel holds that the hand is not absolutely required. A vessel with the same capacity would be legitimate. And the difference between them is, do I learn from the Pasuk in Parshas Shmini, which was a Sha'a, a one-time event? We have a semicolon in our markings indicating that we're not turning to a new sugya whatsoever, but we're changing, we'll call it tracks right now, and focusing on Rav. And that we have indicated with the diamond, as we explained before in our Mivneh heading above. Omale Rav Kahana Vravasi Le Rav. Let's review. Rav mentioned at the second line from the top that where something is repeated, in the case of Mincha, it's repeated in the Torah in order to convey the idea that something is binding. Before we go on, let's note our Mivneh, structural note in the outside margin. You see a triangle featured, and we have an indication that this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. That means we'll have a back and forth type discussion with the point facing up, kushios, with the point facing down, shuvos, point facing up, questions, point facing down, responses. We have a double underline under that will highlight the words hagosha and melach in this sugya. By way of introduction, the case of hagosha, which we've featured with the double underline, by the way, do you see where the next double underline is? You'll notice at the bottom line, the word melach has this. So as far as today's shir is concerned, we will be focusing on this first double underline, the issue of hagosha. Hagosha is a process where the bowl of the that contains the flour that constitutes the meal offering, the flour with the oil and lavona, this is brought to the southwestern corner of the Mizbeach. That's called Hagosha. And we've noted in our Mivneh heading, in parentheses, Tana Beikra, Hagosha is something that is repeated in the Psukim, Veloy Ma'akva, and nevertheless it's not binding. So that will be a challenge to Rav's rule. Rav said that where something is repeated, it is binding. Well, we're going to challenge that from the case of Hagosha. At the bottom line, we're going to see the opposite. Melach, and we've indicated Lo Tana Beikra, the issue of salt, the need to salt the korban, in this case the meal offering, uvechol zois ma'akev, and nevertheless the salting is binding. That too represents a challenge to that which Rav taught. Rav said that if something's not repeated, it's not binding. Here we'll have an example of something that's not repeated, and yet it is binding in the case of the salt. So as we turn back to the Gemara, just to review, the fact that we have a diamond around Rav indicates that at this point in the Gemara, our discussion focuses on Rav and attempts to clarify or challenge his rule. So the Gemara continues. Rav Kana and Rav Asi ask Rav, Harei Hagosha, the Tana Bokra, Veloi Ma'akva. Notice with the markings, we've double underlined Hagosha, we've dashed on the line Tana Beikra. At the bottom line, you notice Melach is double underline, and we've dashed on the line Lo Tana Beikra. Something there it's not repeated. In the case of Agosha, we've squiggle underline Velo Ma'akva. Here we have a case of something doubled in the scripturally, and yet Lo Ma'akva. At the bottom, we have in the case of Melach, it's not doubled, and yet Uma Akva, which you can see is also squiggle underline. So with the markings, you can get a very good picture of the thrust and the direction of the Gemara's questioning. So the first question introduces Hagosha. It shows us that it's something that is repeated, and yet it's lo ma'akva, it's not binding. That's a challenge to Rav's rule. The Gemara answers, my Tana Bei, what do you intend to constitute the repetition with regard to Hagosha? Dichtiv, it says in Parshas Tzav, Perek Vov, Posuk Zayin, Zois Teras HaMincha, Hakrev Oysa B'nei Aroim, Lifnei Hashem, goes on to say, El Pnei HaMizbeach. The Gemara says, well, I have news for you. Hahu, that pasuk, has its own role. Likboya lo mokoim hu da'asa. The need of this pasuk of Zayis Torah Semincha in Perek Vav, it's not here simply to repeat the issue or the stage of Hagosha. Its purpose is for something else. It's to establish the location of the Hagosha, the Sanya. And all of that is contained in the next, in this particular Tanaic source. So the question was raised from Hagosha. The Gemara then gave an answer. The man, the inverted triangle, indicates an answer. From this point till practically the bottom of the page will be involved with the issue of location of Hagosha. The second line from the bottom of the Gemara, where the triangle repositions itself, point up, Maskif lo Rav Huna, that will be a new question in our back and forth structure, where the Gemara will again challenge Rav from the case of Melach. In the meantime, though, we want to deal with the issue right now of location of Hagosha. The bowl containing the meal offering is brought to the corner of the Mizbeach. Desanya, the Pasuk says, Lifnei Hashem. This was part of the Pasuk that we quoted from Perek Vav Pasuk Zayin. Lifnei Hashem, maybe a word before we actually get into the source itself. When you're in the Azorah of the Beis HaMikdash, you have an external altar, the large altar which was used for most sacrifices, and the altar was positioned, relatively speaking, in the east of the eastern part of the Azorah, relatively speaking, relative to the Heichal. The Heichal contained a number of very significant vessels, including the Aron HaKodesh. The Aron HaKodesh represents the location where the divine presence was most concentrated. So we can refer to that as the area that's where the Shechina or Hashem, so to speak, is located, as far as our discussion is concerned. So the with regard to the bowl of the meal offering, the Torah says that one is to draw the mincha lifnei Hashem. We have in the Rashi, you can see a diagram of that which we mentioned, an aerial view of the Mizbeach and the Heichal with the Kodesh HaKadoshim in it. So if I want to be at a point that's lifnei Hashem, I want to be on the western side of the Mizbeach. Because when you're on the western side of the Mizbeach, you're closest to the Heichal. So the Braisa says, Lifnei Hashem, Yochol b'Ma'arov. Does that mean I'm supposed to be on the western side of the Mizbeach? Talmud Lomar, El Pnei HaMizbeach. The Pasuk also uses that expression. The Mizbeach has a ramp that leads up to the Mizbeach. It's called the Kevesh. And you can see that illustrated too. The Kevesh, when you're walking up the ramp, in your mind's eye, you're walking toward the Mizbeach, greeting the Mizbeach, so to speak. The Mizbeach is looking at you as you're going up the ramp. So you're walking toward the face of the Mizbeach. So when the Pasuk says, El Pnei HaMizbeach, I might think that the bowl of the meal offering should be on the southern side of the Mizbeach, the southern side constituting the face of the Mizbeach. So the Braisa says, if you thought west, but it says Pnei HaMizbeach, which indicates south. El Pnei HaMizbeach Yochol Badorom. If I am to emphasize Pnei HaMizbeach, does that mean I should be in the south? Talmud Lomar Lifnei Hashem. And on the other hand, it said Lifnei Hashem, which meant to the west. Ha Ketzad, how can I therefore accomplish this seeming contradiction? Magisha, you bring the bowl close to the Bekeren Droimis Maravis, bring it to the southwestern corner, Keneged Chuda Shel Keren Vedayo. Bring it literally to the corner at which point the southern side and the western side of the Mizbeach join together. So that if I bring my bowl of meal offering to that point, I am thereby accomplishing both west and south. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Rabbi Elazar has a different approach, and hence we've called him number two, where in the beginning of the source we had indicated number one. The number one opinion says southwestern corner is what you have to do in order to accomplish the Pusuk requirements. Rabbi Elazar has a different approach. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Yochol Yagishenu L'Ma'arova Shokeren, L'Droma Shokeren, should I bring it to the southern, to the Marova, the western side, to the and to the southern side? Should I bring it to both sides in order to fulfill the Torah requirement? Amris, the Gemara answers. It answers with, or the Brisa, or Rabbi Elazar, answers with a rule. Kol mokoim shata moitzei shtei mikrois. Wherever you see two psukim, echod mikayim atzmo mikayim chavero, one pasuk allows itself to be established and the other pasuk also to be fulfilled. In other words, if you have one pasuk that itself can be fulfilled, not at the expense of the other, the echod mekayim atzmo umevatel es chavero, and the other pasuk, if I were to emphasize that, I may be fulfilling what it says, but it will be at the expense of the former phrase. Manichim es shemekayim atzmo umevatel chavero, I will therefore choose to de-emphasize, to leave aside the one that fulfills only itself but cancels the other, the Tosin Eshe Mekayim Atzo Umekayim Chavero, and accept and emphasize the posuk or the phrase, the verse that fulfills itself and also the other posuk as well. Up to this point, it may appear a bit obscure, but it will become clear. If you say, bring the bowl to Lifnei Hashem, which is to the western side, well, the western side is the west. You have voided the fulfillment of Penei HaMizbeach, which is the southern side. However, if you bring it to the southern side of the Mizbeach, believe it or not, kiyamto lifnei Hashem, you are able to fulfill the idea of lifnei Hashem. We have a little bracketed section here. These brackets are not for skipping whatsoever, but it's simply here to indicate that the Gemara is going to be preoccupied with a detail of what we just learned before we get back onto track with regard to the question-answer of the surrounding Rav's entire approach. So with regard to this last point, the Gemara focuses on a detail in the Brisa. The Gemara asks, "Vehecho kiyamta," where, how in the world, if by bringing it to the southern side of the Mizbeach, how in the world am I mekayim lefnei Hashem? Omer Avashi, kosovar haitana. This Tana, namely Rabbi Eliezer, holds kulei Mizbeach batsofoin koi. The entire Mizbeach, not like the diagram printed in the Rashi appears, but rather like the diagram we have included on the inside margin, the Mizbeach was pushed northwards, whereby the southern side of the Mizbeach itself was in the northern half of the Azora. I hope that you can see our diagram, and if you were to bring the bowl to the southern side of the Mizbeach, whereby you're fulfilling Penei HaMizbeach, notice how the southern side of the Mizbeach is aligned opposite the entrance to the Heichal, which contains, of course, the Kodesh HaKodoshim. So, wouldn't you agree that by bringing the bowl to the southern side of the Mizbeach, at that position you are also lifnei Hashem. You're also facing the entrance to the Heichal, thereby being able to fulfill both. If, on the other hand, I had brought the bowl to the western side of the Mizbeach, that may be very fine and good with regard to lifnei Hashem, but I am not fulfilling Penei HaMizbeach, that being the southern side. But by bringing it to the southern side of the Mizbeach, I am Mekayim Atzmo and Mekayim Chaver. I'm fulfilling Penei HaMizbeach. I'm also Mekayim the Lifnei Hashem. We pointed out that the sugya that we're involved with continues with questions on Rav's approach, and the next question will come from the issue of the salt, where we see it's not repeated scripturally, and yet it is binding. The sugya itself continues onto Chof Amar Aleph, but at this point, since we are doing a Daf Yomi Shiur, we will use this as a stopping point with which we will conclude our Shiur for today.